This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guests, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful, as usual.
As usual, of course. I think now we are into the throes of summer. I think we're stuck in the upper 90s to low 100s for the next probably until Thanksgiving.
Let me tell you something. It's over 100, isn't it?
We've had several days this week that was over 100, yes.
Yes, it's pretty hot out. I mean, you know. Anybody that thinks this is going to get cool is out of their mind.
Yeah, and I've heard that next week might get back up into the low hundreds. I heard one day I saw 106, another day 107. Now, I don't know. There's still several days before it gets here, so it might change. But goodness gracious, that's awfully hot, and it's awful lot of those kinds of days on the docket.
And people should not go outside in the heat of the day.
No. It's dangerous.
You know, they should stay in. Except early morning, then go for a walk, or late in the afternoon, but stay out of the hot sun.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
it is not good for you.
It's not good for people. And then the one thing I think about is when I take our dog out in the afternoon, I try not to take him out in the heat of the day because the pavement can get so hot it can burn their little feet.
It really can. And I saw a picture the other day of this little dog's paws that were burned.
Really,
the owner didn't think about it. Took him out. And he burned his little paws, and that's not good.
No, that's not good at all.
So, you know, you need to think about your pets also. Yeah. You know, don't take them out when it's real hot either, and especially the ones like yours that's got the curly hair.
Yeah.
They've got a little more hair than some of the others.
Yeah. Because we'll go in, and we'll get down, you know, maybe a few feet away, and all of a sudden he starts panting because he's got all that thick hair, and it's hot. It's like people wearing a big winter coat in the middle of summer.
It is, and you know they don't. Everything goes through their nose and their mouth, as you know, as far as getting the heat out.
Yeah,
and that's the only way they can do it.
Yeah.
So you need to sprinkle them with water or pour a little water on their head.
What about the llamas? How do they stay cool?
They go into the pond.
Oh, so they just
you know
go
these
swim.
Llamas love water. They are water animals.
Oh.
And when it gets hot, they're in the pond, and then they love sand.
Mm.
They have a sand deal, just like a little kid, and they go and roll in the sand, and the sand cools them down.
Wow. I didn't know
that. I don't know how it does it, but it does. And they will go and lay by the pond and get ready.
What?
I mean, they'd go over there and lay down and get ready to get in it.
What?
And they'll go and stand up to their knees in the pond.
Really?
Yes, they will.
Wow.
And so that's the only animal I know that's smart enough to know exactly, you know, how to cool off.
Yeah. It sounds like it's good to be a llama.
I think it's good to be a llama. You know, they have become so popular. Every store you go in, they've got llama blankets, llama towels, everything's llama. And over at the mall, they have a 3-foot llama now.
Really?
Like $300-something dollars.
Wow.
And this llama has real llama hair on it.
Really?
Real llama hair. How about that?
Wow, dude, that's impressive.
And I've seen so many videos on llamas lately, you know, and they've got their bow ties, their shirts on. I mean, it's become big business, let me tell you.
So, because I know we used to dress our pets, you know, they used to have dog clothes and some cat clothes.
Oh, yeah.
And now they have llama clothes.
They have llama clothes. And, I mean, llamas love to perform.
Oh.
They are people. Animals. They love to go with you and do things. And I had people working out here at my place the other day. The electric company was cutting all the trees, branches. All 13 llamas went to the gate to watch. I mean, they loved to watch everybody. And they all went down there. They had to see it.
Oh,
I mean, they loved to be entertained.
Wow. And,
yeah, they loved to be entertained. And,
that is...
I love everything about llamas. Real quickly, my llamas go up to the North 40, as we call it, and every day at a certain time. And if they hear you down at the barn, they get in line, single file, and they come down to eat.
Really?
Even the six-year-old can go up and tell them it's time for to eat, and they get behind him and come down. Even the six-year-old can do it.
Wow, they're so smart.
They are smart. And then when they get down there, if someone gets out of line, he has to go to the back. They will tell him in no uncertain terms, get to the back.
They're being llama grounded.
They are being llama grounded, and they just have all kinds of rules. And it's amazing, that they have rules.
So not only are they smart, but they're very well-mannered.
They're very well-mannered, more than any animal I've ever been around.
How cute.
Yeah. And if one of the little kids falls down, they go over to it and immediately start smelling up to see if they can help.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And they like little kids. They like everybody. And if you put your head through the fence, they will kiss you.
Really? How cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we do that all the time. They give us a kiss.
Oh,
sweet. They are very sweet animals.
Will they do that to just anybody, or do they do that because they know you and they trust you?
I've never taken a stranger down and said, put your head through the fence.
Yeah.
I need to experiment if they kiss them, too. They probably would.
That could be weird. Take a stranger down there and tell them, put your head through the fence.
Yeah. Let's see if our llamas will kiss you,
Let's see if they'll kiss you or bite your face off.
That's right. And a lot of people say, will they bite us? No, they won't bite you. They're sweet.
Oh, how cute.
Oh, my goodness. Well, everybody knows a lot more about llamas this morning.
I know. That's a little education in llamas. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring. Right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, this is all about growing your money so you can retire happy, wealthy, and early, and that's the goal. Now, for people who are scared of retirement, because you see these things all the time, and it's almost like as soon as somebody says, I've got to save for retirement, or I've got to plan for retirement, or anything like that, it's almost like the R word turns into, some kind of a dirty word. It's like, ooh, retirement, that's not fun. What do we do? So what do you tell somebody like that who's in the prime of their life? They're making a lot of money. They're enjoying their life. Maybe they got a bunch of toys, boats, cars, trucks, whatever they want. Maybe an extra house or two. Maybe they travel a lot, and they don't want to take money away from that to save for retirement because it's not fun. What do you tell that person?
I always tell them, think about tomorrow. Tomorrow always comes. A lot of people are living for today, but if you think about what am I going to do in the future? I mean, we're going to get older. We don't want to talk about that. But everything turns around. So as you know, when you were young, you're going to work forever. But then you become middle-aged, and you say, I don't want to work anymore. I want to retire. Okay, can you retire? Can you retire today, 5 years from now, 10? What in the world is it going to take? Well, you've got to look and see. Do I have enough money? No. But could I have enough money in 7 years? Yes. 10? Certainly. How about tomorrow? Probably no. So they have to look at what they've got. What do you want to accomplish? Mm-hmm. And most people get a lot smarter when they get older. When they get 55, 60, they're getting smart then. They're saying, I know I'm going to have to retire at some point. I know I have to have enough money to do it. And in order to do that, what am I going to have to do? So then they start talking to me and saying, I might want to change some things. I might want to have an alternate investment instead of just the stock market in my 401k. Mm-hmm. I did a 401k to an IRA this week, and the person is 60 years old.
Mm.
And, it's time to think about it. Can I get another job at 60? Well, most people can. But there's a few of them that if you lose your job, you may not be able to be rehired.
What would you say is an age? Because, you know, when you say that this person is 60, that seems to be starting to cut it maybe a little bit close to start thinking about retirement. Is that a good age or is that too late?
It's not too late, but you got to really get on it if you're 60. Mm-hmm. If you're 60 and haven't done any retirement planning, you've got to get busy. You have a short span there. You know, if you're going to retire at 67, 68, you can still make it. But if you're going to retire in 1 year, you need to put that money to work now, and then it'll have to keep working after you retire because you've got to have interest coming in. You know, I saw this week a headline. To retire, you need $1.7 million.
So it's gone up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gone up. And $1.7 million would make anybody comfortable. You know, you would be very comfortable at that. But if you're looking at $250,000, you're not going to be comfortable.
Okay.
You're going to have a hard time sustaining because you're going to have the income off of that and then your Social Security, which is maybe $30,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've got to get it done now, you know?
So what would you tell the person who now hears, okay, I need $1.7 million. I thought I was in good shape. You know, say somebody's got $750,000, give or take, in the bank. So they're getting close. They're getting close to that $1 million mark where you know, is where a lot of people generally try to get. But now they think, oh, man, now I need another $1 million. And what do you tell that person who now just had the wind, you know, taken right out of their sails and say, I'll never make that?
Well, we have to do the best we can. Do you want to just give up? I mean, it's like I always told the children, if you give up before you know what you can do, you'll never succeed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got to see what you can do. And whatever you've got, that's what you start with. And you say, okay, I need some interest on this. How can I make the most interest conservatively where I know at the end of the time I'll still have that interest?
Yeah.
In other words, at 55, don't take as much risk. At 60, sure don't take as much. Because if you lose 40% or 30%, it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
It's going to hurt for many years. So the best way to do it is get conservative at 50 or 55 years old and start planning conservatively to have enough money to retire. Because nobody can live on $30,000 a year.
Oh, no.
Nobody can live on $40,000, I don't believe.
No.
So, you know, they've got to have $60,000 to $100,000 a year. Because think about it this way. What are you making now? Okay, most people that come into my place are making $200,000 to $300,000 a year. Okay? So if you're making that much now, your income's going to stop. What are you going to live on? If you're doing $200,000 now.
That'll shock you into reality right there.
Right there will put you into reality. Okay, I'm going to need $200,000 a year. Well, no, but you're going to probably at least need $100,000 to $125,000.
Uh-huh. So
in order to do that, you've got to get busy.
So most people that come to see you that make somewhere between $200,000 and $300,000 a year, do they already have things paid off, or are they still, you know, paying off the house and the cars?
A few people still owe for a home, and some of them have just built a big home. Yeah, I mean, they're getting ready to retire, and they're building new homes, which is wonderful. They need it, and they deserve it. But the only thing you have to be cautious about is after you build a new house, do I have enough income to make it?
Mm-hmm.
And I've got several people that are fixing to retire this year, and they're either building a house or they've bought a house on a lake.
Ah.
And now these people all have $1 million.
Okay, so they're ready to go.
Right now, yeah. These particular people have $1 million, and they need to get on up above that, okay? So the people below that at 300, we're trying to get them to $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's got a different place we need to get them to. But you've got to have income coming in. And if you don't have income coming in when you retire, you're going to get into your principal, and it won't last long.
Yeah, then at that point, you're starting to just hemorrhage money.
Yes, and we want people's income to outlive them.
Yeah.
Like if the husband dies, we want the wife to have enough money to live another 25 years. because women outlive their husbands by 10 to 12 years.
Ooh, that's a lot.
It is. But most of the widows that I know, that's what they've done. They've outlived their husband. Hmm. And the husbands have died younger, and then they were left, and they have to have enough money to live on because they can't go back to work. A lot of them never worked in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And they were a stay-at-home mom and then a grandmother, and then, you know, it just got away from them.
Yeah, so even if somebody's sitting around right now and they're thinking, you know, gosh, retirement kind of scares me. I don't really want to do it. It's not a lot of fun. Well, if not for yourself, then at least think of the people who you may be leaving behind if something was to happen to you first.
That's exactly right. Think of your wife and then the grandchildren. Everybody wants to take care of their grandchildren. They want to get them through college and get them started in life.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know a lot of people that, you know, they're giving the college tuition to their grandchildren. And they should. I mean, it's a nice thing to do. But you always have to say, how much will be left? Do I have enough to sustain myself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you have to think also, if one of them gets sick, it takes an awful lot of money.
Yeah.
You know. We talked about it. It used to be $25,000 or so. It's like $100,000 now a month.
Oh, yeah. It's very expensive.
I've had some people come and tell me their prescription on cancer was $27,000.
Good Lord.
I mean, it's just amazing what medicine costs.
Yeah.
It's tremendous.
You know, don't they say that an illness or something like that is the number one cause of most bankruptcies in America? Am I somewhat right? Or
it is exactly right. People, once they get sick, lots of times they have to declare bankruptcy because they don't have the wherewithal to keep it going. That's why they have to sell their life insurance policies.
Yeah. So we know now how retirement can affect not only yourself, but other people. And so then people are thinking, okay, well, I've got to do something. I understand, because it's not just me. It's other people. It's emergencies that could come up. It's things like that. So now they're saying, okay, well, retirement still isn't fun. So if retirement is not fun, the next best thing, it seems like, is at least make it easy. And with this type of an investment, when we're talking about investing in life insurance policy, this, Faye, I believe, from what I've seen, is probably the easiest investment probably that is available anywhere.
I think it is, because if you take and you say, well, I've got a 401k, okay, it has ups and downs, and a lot of them have made money over the years. Some of them made small amounts of money. But if you want it secure, you can take some money out of your 401k, do a life settlement policy. Most of my people started out, you know, $200,000, $250,000, and then they gradually increased it as they liked what it did. Mm-hmm. They liked it when those policies mature and they've made 25 or 30%, even 8%. You know, those short-term policies, you know, less than a year, you know, they're going to make 8%. But it turns the money quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got the 30-month policies, several of those, have come in early. Well, when they do, you know, instead of 2 years, you're looking at 1 year. So that makes a big difference in your portfolio. But even after you retire, you can do a life settlement forever. And you don't have to get smarter. You don't have to change your lifestyle. Just as the policies mature, you get paid. And I have a lot of people in these, you know, around 600 people, and they love the way it works. And I did a deal for some people this week. Well, they were recommended by one of our other customers. And we have so many people that recommend us every week that all of our new customers, most of them, come from referrals, you know.
That's a
big
deal.
And then people who've never heard of us, they hear us on the radio,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they come off the radio. They hear us. They listen to music, and they listen to the radio on weekends to us, and then they hear the ads during the week.
You know, and the thing that seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you know the behavior and the patterns of people that come see you for the first time, it seems like people hear about this. They come in and they want to get their feet wet a little bit. They take their first investment. They get involved in their first policy. And then it seems like after that, it's pretty much just give me more, give me everything you can. As soon as you can, I am in. And they're in for years. Is that fairly accurate?
Hey, that's exactly right. Now, a lot of people don't have any patience. You know, I'm serious. I have people that think, you know, it's just going to happen overnight. But it doesn't work that way, as you know. Mm-hmm. It is slow. In other words, it's a year, 2 years every time. It's not instant. You're not going to become a millionaire over time. We're not going to make you rich, in other words.
Yeah.
But we're going to give you good interest to sustain your retirement, and to help you get ready for retirement by having good policies and paying you. And, you know, I love the life insurance companies. They pay quickly. You know, you're looking at 6 to 8 weeks after someone passes away to get paid. And I just love everything about the way it works.
You know,
I like it because we don't touch their money.
That's another thing. You know, all those security measures that are in place as well. You were kind of mentioning, you know, how it's kind of a slow growth and something that happens over, you know, several years. You put this plan together. It's not a one and done type of thing. But with that slow growth, that steady growth, also comes a little bit of, I guess, reduced risk would be a good way to say it too, you know. So it's not this huge bang at the beginning. You're not going to explode your bank account, and you're not going to, you know, get rich overnight. But at the same time, you also don't have to worry about, you know, all of a sudden your entire portfolio is shot while you were sleeping, like you would in the stock market.
Well, that's right, and you know, I keep seeing all these articles, you know, in the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg. So should we all get out of the stock market? Some of them are saying you better get out of the stock market. So, you know, I don't know. I always let the stock market take care of itself. But I do know that if you've got policies coming due all the time, and these are reputable life insurance companies, the biggest in the United States, I think it's safer to be getting money out of a life insurance policy than being in the stock market. And that's just my feeling on that.
Well, you know, speaking of the relationship between the two, this type of an investment has nothing to do with anything. So, I mean, we know how Wall Street can go up and down, you know, at the blink of an eye, but a life settlement is completely separate. It's not affected by anything.
No, it doesn't matter if we keep dealing with Iran or North Korea or China. And that affects our stock market every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it goes real high. It's high right now. But, you know, the other day it dropped, you know, 1,000 points.
Yeah.
So you never know what the stock market might be going to do. And as I said 2 weeks ago, and I've mentioned it twice, about bonds, corporate bonds that have actually lost money. And I didn't ever think about that, you know, that a corporate bond could lose money. I never had thought about it.
I hadn't either.
So, yeah, and if people invested a lot of money in it, you know, and they've had a loss for 8 years, that's not a good thing.
No, that's not a good thing.
No. And then this week, there is a gold company. I read this in the paper. A gold company sold, I don't know how much, but they're going to have to refund $10 million here in Texas to elderly people. They talked into buying all this gold they shouldn't have been buying, and scared them to death. Absolutely scared them to death. They took money out of the bank and bought all this gold.
Uh-oh.
And they're going to have to give all that money back.
Oh, wow.
So apparently they told them some really big fish tales, you know?
Yeah, there's some bad information right there.
Yeah, and I feel sorry for those people because that's a lot of money, $10 million.
Yeah, it is. You know, when we're talking about getting into investments with information, you know, kind of like this gold, misinformation, and then, you know, people who have been in the stock market for a number of years may not even be able to read their reports. I know sometimes they're complicated and things, but with a life settlement, this seems like this is a very well-informed type of investment. People don't have to be a doctor to read reports and understand cancer and how it works, and part of the reason is because of the small niche of policies that you're buying. You're only buying policies with a policyholder that has stage 4 cancer. And there's reasons for this.
That's exactly right. Because our people want to turn their money. They're not interested in a 5 to 7 year policy that, you know, way down the road. They want to turn this money to get ready for retirement. So when we started doing cancer policies only, sometimes it takes us an extra month to close on those policies. Sometimes we've got 15 policies out that we're working, but it takes a while. We have to get notarized signatures. We have to get it changed over, the beneficiaries changed over, the ownership changed over. But it's worth it because we know that a cancer policy is going to come due. We know these people have got stage four. We know if it's $1 million or more, we've got two reports. And the report tells us this person's very ill and this is all the treatment they've had. And all of our clients get copies of everything. We give them all the health that they want to see. They get that what used to be page 14 that tells them who the person is, what kind of cancer it is, what life insurance company holds the paper, what the face amount is, how much they've invested, and what their risk is of it going over. So they know all the facts up front, and that's the way it should always be. They should always know the facts.
So as a blanket statement, and I know that policies change, the type of cancers change, things that people have done for treatment or not done for treatment change among policies, but generally, overall speaking, for somebody who's listening to this for the first time and saying, okay, I kind of get the concept, I think I understand, why is this a much better, in your opinion, a much better type of investment than something like Wall Street, overall speaking?
Well, I like it because I know how much they're going to make. I know that it's definite. It's not iffy. It's not maybe at the end you'll get all your money back plus 30% or that you won't get it. This way we know they're going to get their principal back. They're going to get their interest. They're either going to get it early, they're going to get it on time, or it'll be late. But you know you're going to get it. So I like that part. The contract is for a specific amount. That's what I like. And I like it because the bank holds the paper. In other words, when we open the account for them, the bank takes over from there. They do all of our back office. They make sure the premiums are paid, and that's a big thing. That's your biggest risk, is those premiums being paid. Mm-hmm. Then the next risk is it's not liquid until the policy comes due. So they know that up front. All of that is told everybody up front. Is not all of them are going to be early. Not all of them are going to be on time. So we try to take as much risk out of this as we can. And then we have the bank get the payoff. The check comes to the bank, and then they put it in everybody's account. And that takes a lot of risk out right there because we're not handling the money. The checks are not made to us. They're always made to the bank, and I love that.
So when you say to really kind of put this in a practical, I guess, dummy down scenario, when you say that the banks hold the money, nobody's writing you a check, and then you're out, you know, shopping or buying a car or whatever, and then when a policy comes due,
no,
you got to scramble to find it. It's not that at all.
The checks always go to the bank.
Yeah.
The bank handles it. They are the trustee for us and for the consumer.
Which is yet another safety measure that people don't have to worry about. They don't have to worry about being up in the middle of the night checking their portfolio. Really, and you kind of alluded to this earlier, patience with this type of investment is, I guess, the hardest part, you know, because you invest and then you basically just sit and wait for the policy to mature and then you get paid. It literally is that simple. You don't have to worry about things. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to check up on anything. You don't have to follow up on anything. When a policy matures, you send people an email. Hey, this money will be in your bank within a few weeks. Is that about sum it up?
That's exactly right. And it's not like we need to get up at midnight and check and see what's worth today.
Yeah.
You know what your policy's worth. You knew going in this is what your investment is. You know what you're going to get back.
Mm-hmm.
And not very many investments do you know how much you're going to get back.
Yeah.
Have you thought about that?
You're certainly not going to get that on Wall Street.
No. They're not. They can't tell you how much you're going to get back.
Or if you're going to get anything back.
That's right. Oh, yeah, how about that? But we always know you're going to get your principal back.
Mm-hmm.
We know how much interest you're going to get. And the only thing we don't know is if it's going to be on time, if it's going to be early, or if it's going to be late. We think we know, and we think we're pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
And usually we are. You know, we've got some late, but then we've got a lot of them early. So it usually balances out.
As you look at the big picture, you know, for a life settlement type of investment, it seems like a lot of people who come and invest, they get involved. One reason I would guess is because the policies mature quicker. So they, you know, you're in for a couple of years, you know, what depending on how long the policy is, 18 months, 24 months, 30 months, whatever it is, it seems like they mature a little bit faster, and then they can take that, roll it into another one. So it seems like a small amount of money comes in, and when I say small, put that in air quotes, because we're talking about a pretty good chunk of change, you know, a 24% profit on a $100,000 investment. You do the math, you know, it's sizable. But you take these investments that come in, and then you reinvest it, and before you know it, this thing has pretty much snowballed, and within a couple of years, you've taken what seems like these quote-unquote small profits, and you've turned it into a lot of money. Didn't you say a couple of weeks ago that somebody had made, what was it, like $800,000 in a year or something like that?
It's either 4 or 5 years. I'd have to go back and look at his portfolio, but that's what he's made. And then I've had two or three that made 90-something thousand this last year in interest.
Yeah.
That's a lot of interest money. If you can make 94,000 in interest per year, you can live pretty good, I can tell you.
Yeah. That's a big deal. And so is that one of the things that people like, is that they mature faster and they can reinvest in more policies?
Yes, and they like it when they get the email and say, your policy's just matured, you've got 30% or 24%, whatever it is, and they're excited. They're always glad. As I said, we always get notes back thanking us and saying, you know, good job, and put me in another policy when it becomes available.
So for somebody who's going through this right now and they're thinking, okay, this sounds pretty good, however, I don't really want to take a chunk of resources out of my day-to-day life right now. What would you say to that person as far as how getting involved in a life settlement investment, how would this affect their daily life as they're living now?
Well, it's not going to affect it. Wherever you've got that money now, let's say it's in a CD. It's not making anything anyway. You need to make money. I don't think any of us are above making money. If we are, we need our heads examined. And, you know, I would immediately call for that. So I'm saying if you've got it in a savings account, it's not making any money. If it's at the bank, it's not making any money. Try this and see if you like it, you know. If you've got a 401k, if you're eligible to take some out, take some out and see if it works for you. If you're self-employed, you can write a check and say, okay, Faye, I want to put $300,000 in this and see how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And they can do that. And then if they like it, it's more mature, then they're going to want to put more money in.
So it seems like people can go ahead. We can all find, you know, areas that we're probably wasting money and we don't need to, foolishly. Even if you have money sitting in a bank someplace and it's not making any interest, that's wasting money right there. So it's easy to take some of these things, put it into a life settlement, start making money where you're not. Because we always say all the time that if you're not making money, you're essentially losing money. So
you're
it doesn't sound
up.
Like it'll affect anybody's day-to-day life at all. They can go about living. They don't have to. There's no effort required on their part. And correct me if I'm wrong. And I know we've simplified this, you know, 1,000 times. But basically, when you set this up, you have accounts. You have piles of money that you're moving around for people. You have the investment, quote-unquote, pile, and that's the money that you're investing into policies. Then you have another account or a, quote, pile where people can take and they can live off that. You have another pile that can do other things. So you set this up as really a number of checks and balances. You have things set up so people are not always coming in and having to give money. You're just moving it around from account to account. It's very smooth. Is that accurate?
That's right. And like lots of times people will say, Faye, I want to keep this much cash in my account when I retire. They want $60,000 a year in there. Mm-hmm. Some of them want $100,000. So you have to go in and make that available immediately. So we'll put maybe 2 years of cash in there And then as interest comes up, we'll put more interest in it all the time to keep it at a certain amount. And that's what we have to do. Once they retire, it's our responsibility to keep the interest going for them and to keep them making money. You don't want to stop making money just because you retire.
No, and I don't know that people always think about that. They think, well, I got to get to retirement, but once they get there, you know, you don't have that regular paycheck coming in anymore, and so you've got to have some money coming from someplace. Otherwise, you're just losing money as you just, you know, write checks and, you know, slide your credit card or your debit card through a machine and pay for things. You watch that balance continually tick down, so you've got to replace that. And this would, it seems like, would be the safest way to do it that would not affect anybody's living standard after retirement.
That's right. Now, we do have some people who have Bentleys, they have Lamborghinis, and I figure, you know, if you have a Lamborghini or if you have a Bentley or some other exotic car, you can afford to have some of your money in life settlements,
mm-hmm.
and quite a bit, in fact. And we do have some clients, you know, that they do love sports cars, they love fast living, but they still want to have money for a rainy day,
yeah,
in case something goes wrong. Because you never know, something can go wrong.
Sure. And as long as you're growing your money, you have more money to save for a rainy day or an emergency or whatever may come up. I mean, there could be maybe a family member that gets sick and, you know, they're need some help with some of their medical bills or whatever the case may be. Maybe you want to donate some to a charity. I mean, there's a number of things, but I don't know that anybody's ever said, you know, I think I've got enough money, I'll just stop right here. Has anybody ever said that?
No one has ever said that to me. They've said, I think I'll put this much in. Sometimes it's $1 million. Sometimes it's $500,000. And then I have people that start with $100,000 to $150,000,
mm-hmm.
and said, we need to get this growed.
Okay.
And if they've got the time, we can grow it and make it work.
And so you put them on a path and you map it all out and take care of all that for them.
That's right. We're going to map it out, try to get them there and as quickly as possible, but it's going to take 7 or 8 years, you know?
Perfect. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
So every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia, and you always bring interesting, fun things to the table. So what's the topic this morning?
This morning, it's the story of a man who was not a Texan, by the way. His wife was. She was from the Hill Country. And the story of his life, it's very interesting. The man's name is James Avery.
Hmm.
I'm sure you've heard of James Avery.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, he was born in Milwaukee, raised in Chicago. He came to Texas as a U.S. Air Corps. He was stationed at Lackland. And he remembered that people here were can-do. You know, even back in World War II, we were a can-do state, and everybody remembers that. He was a pilot, and he commanded a B-26. He survived 44 missions over Germany.
Wow.
Yeah, 44 over Germany.
That's a lot.
After World War II, he enrolled at the University of Illinois. He received a B.A. in industrial design, and he pursued college-level teaching. Now, I wouldn't have thought this, but he was teaching at the University of Colorado, and he started exploring jewelry making with his students. In 1950, he said, you know, I'm tired of teaching. I want to go do something else. So he returned to Texas, and about this time, he returned to the church. He had been an agnostic for years,
oh.
And he reflected on his saying, my renewed Christian commitment, along with my decision to leave teaching, has led to a new direction in my life. And this is why he started with Christian symbolism. So in 1954, he spent the summer out in Kerrville with his in-laws, and they had an old garage, and I have a picture of it. Do you remember in the 50s, the garages were detached and they were old wooden structures?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and the old garage doors just raised up. Remember that?
Yeah, they didn't like bend. It was like a solid piece that would just tilt.
That's exactly right. And anyway, he started out in this old garage, this old two-car garage with $250.
Wow.
He's built a little small workshop. Then he bought him some hand tools and some scraps of silver and copper. And he was going to just, you know, start a little jewelry making. And he didn't know if it worked or, you know, what was going to happen. And, of course, in 1957, he mailed his first Christian jewelry catalog. It was 16 pages.
Wow.
He had 39 items, all handmade, that he had made. And he also hired his first employee, Fred Garcia, in 1957.
Wow.
So the company started growing. He incorporated it to James Avery Craftsman in 1965.
Wow.
So 2 years after that, he went to the Small Business Administration and got a small loan. But the company headquarters was constructed on 20 acres in Kerrville, Texas, the heart of the Texas Hill Country. And it wasn't far from the old original garage. Then word spread, people found their way down there, and everyone who came, they were greeted personally, cordially, and he formed lasting and strong customer bonds, and his company took off. It would grow and grow. 53 years later, in 2007, James Avery stepped down and passed the reins to his son, Chris. This company has got 83 stores in 5 states.
Wow, that's impressive.
Their jewelry is available at 215 dealers and in 28 additional states through James Avery. All of it is crafted in the Hill Country, Comfort, Fredericksburg, Hondo, and Kerrville.
Really? Even still?
Still, they never moved out of the Texas Hill Country.
How cool. I know a lot of companies, you know, when they start to grow, they'll start to move someplace else, you know, New York or
oh, yeah. They'll go to the big cities.
Yeah.
But, no, they did not do that. They stayed right there where they knew everybody, and everybody liked them. And this guy was a genius at making jewelry. I mean, it's just amazing what all he did. And put out a catalog, a little 16-page catalog of Christian jewelry, his first thing.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so impressed with his life. 53 years in the Hill Country, and now they're in they have 28 stores.
That is so impressive. You know, it's so cool to hear people like that who literally started their business in the garage and then and then grew it to what it is. I love stories like that. They're so inspiring. You know, when somebody's got an idea or they think, you know, hey, we can do something or we can do something better than something or we can, you know, solve a problem this way or whatever. And they start and you have no idea, you know, where this is going to lead, if anywhere. It can be scary and so intimidating. You start out with these little simple little things, and then you eventually start to upgrade a little bit with your equipment and tools and whatever. And then before you know it, within several years, you've basically taken over and cornered the market. I love stories like that.
And I cannot imagine, me or you or anybody I know, going out with $250, all he had,
yeah,
and in that old garage and said, you know, I think I'll make some samples. I think I'll make some jewelry. And my gosh, everybody loved it. And he started being a success from the start. I mean, I don't know how many pieces he sold that first year, but it gave him enough money to, you know, to buy more material and to get started.
Yeah.
And then people started coming to Kerrville to his little shop to buy the jewelry.
You know, it almost sounds like it's a grassroots bootstrapping kind of a effort, because, you know,
it really is.
The more he made, the more profit he made. He reinvested that back in the business, upgraded equipment, made more jewelry, made better jewelry, made more jewelry faster. It's so inspiring. I love it.
Well, and I'd always known about them and loved their jewelry, but I didn't know how they got started and didn't know they started in the Hill Country and that their home office all their jewelry making is still right there in the Hill Country.
That also was impressive, you know, because so many people would sell out, you know, for some kind of a big profit or, save on overhead or whatever the case may be. And for people to stay true to the people that helped get them off the ground, that is really respectable. That is commendable right there. That says a lot about their character.
And I think a lot of it, he quit being agnostic and went back to his Christian faith. And that was the first things he designed.
Yeah, that is so
and
cool.
And so, yeah, he turned his life around. And I think being in the Texas Hill Country helped. You know, that clean air and the people in the Hill Country are so nice anyway. I think that helped him, you know. He didn't have to be worth a lot, didn't have to have a lot of money to start.
Well, yeah. You know, when you're starting out like that and you don't have a whole lot to work with and you're really kind of unsure about where this is going to go, but you're surrounded by people that act as that support system, it does wonders for, your energy and, you know, how excited you can get about it. And, you know, to see, you know, your local people back you up like this and say, hey, we're going to support you no matter what, it's almost like it comes full circle. You know, they get excited and then you get re-excited and they get more excited and then product gets better, and then it's just this wheel that just keeps spinning, and it almost feeds itself with you know, growth and positive energy and stuff.
And he built it on 20 acres. He took 20 little acres and built this thing out there.
Yeah.
And people came and came, and I don't know when that he started putting it out, you know, and others, he had enough money finally to open those other stores and to put it at Dillard's and places like that.
Yeah, that's a big deal to be able to sell to department stores like that, because, you know, I'm sure they're approached by tons of people who want to put their products in the stores. And for them to pick him over others, it's very impressive.
Yeah, and to go into a Dillard's, I mean, you have to have really had something to get Dillard's to take you on.
Yeah, they're not going to take, like, plastic trinkets.
No, I mean, department. You had to have good jewelry.
Yeah.
And he never told what they're worth. I'm curious what that company's actually worth. Probably a lot of money.
Oh, I'm sure by now, yeah. And considering it started out with $250, it's impressive.
Yeah, and I noticed they also give a lot to charity.
Oh, really?
They give to.
I'm sure.
So, yeah, so you know they've done real well.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's a good story.
Yeah, next time we see Avery in the store, we'll kind of know the backstory now. We'll stop and pause.
You'll know the background of that company and how that jewelry got started.
Exactly. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
We've talked about how important it is to make sure that you grow in your money to retire, not only for yourself, but for your family, your spouse, your kids, your grandkids, everybody that's involved. We've talked about emergencies that could come up. We've talked about how wonderful the Life Settlement Program is. We've talked about why it is, but we should focus just for a minute about how you're only bidding on policies with stage 4 cancer. And that's because we know that these policies are going to mature. These are the ones that mature the quickest. You know, stage 1, stage 2, those could go on for years or go into full remission and never come back. And there's all kinds of companies that will buy those types of policies. And that's great. The policyholder can get their money. The other companies can buy it. But you're focused on these for a very specific reason. And that allows the policyholder to get the money that they need for treatment. And it also provides an investment opportunity. So really, in the end, Faye, this is a win-win for everybody involved.
It really is. We help the people that have got cancer. This gets them out of the bind that they're in. It gets them money for treatment. And lots of times when we're trying to buy a policy, we have a gentleman right now that we thought we were going to close with about 30 days ago. He's been in and out of the hospital. So, you know, a lot their family has a lot of problems. Lots of times they're in the hospital, they're out of the hospital, and they're wanting to sign with us, but they're wanting to wait to make sure how much time they have left. Mm-hmm. So a lot of things go into that decision. And then once we get it signed, we get everything transferred, then our people are the ones that are going to make the difference between what we paid for it and what the face amount is.
So when you see a policy come available, what types of factors are you looking at when you're deciding whether or not to bid on it?
Well, I look to see how many times they've been treated, what cancer medicines they're on now. I look to see how far it's spread. If it started in the lungs, is it now in the ribs? Has it moved forward? And the other thing that all the medical doctors always check, and I notice this in all the information we get, they always check to see if it's went to the brain. Because lots of times that's the last place it'll go.
Yeah, and once it gets to that point, you know that the policy is close to maturing.
That's exactly right. And then if it's in a lot of places, lots of times I'll be reading and it just keeps getting worse and worse. You know, the person is obese. That's the first thing to look for, because if they are, they're going to pass away quicker. Then you look and see how many times have they been in and out of the hospital. What are they on? You know, how much pain medicine are they on? And are they able to do anything? If they says they're out in the garden working, I'm not buying it. That's a no-no.
Yeah.
You know, but when it talks about how many times the treatment, and then if it says we start, I bought one this last week. We don't have it back yet. They started on the surgery. It was so bad they had to stop.
Really?
Yes. They could not complete the surgery. And when they can't complete the surgery, I'm telling you, it will spread very quickly once they've went in there and opened it up.
Wow.
So, you know, that we take all that into consideration. If it says no progression, I'm going backwards right then.
Yeah.
Because if it's not progressing, if there's no sign of it, it's not ready to be sold.
You know, it's very impressive at the vast amount of information you're looking at with every single policy. It's nice to know that you don't just kind of randomly, you know, haphazardly bid on anything that comes across your desk. You're going through these policies with a fine-tooth comb. Not only are you looking at all these things you mentioned, but you're looking at things that they don't do, the things that they haven't done, you know. So if they maybe forego the traditional chemo and radiation and they go for, you know, the long ball, really, so to speak, with, you know, that hope and that miracle thing of going to, you know, the Netherlands for the orange juice diet, hoping that'll work and cure them of all ailments right there. You're looking at that as well.
Yes, and we look at, you know, what year did they discover it? Was it a year ago, 2 years ago? You know, in breast cancer, if it's come back for the second time, we know that it's not going to work, you mm-hmm. know. That they're not going to make it. So I always look to see if it's that second round of cancer.
Yeah.
And if it is on breast cancer, we're trying to buy it.
You know,
and as you said, if lots of these people, even people that don't have breast cancer, men, if it says they turned down chemo, I looked at one this week. They turned down the chemo. But it's just so horrible. They didn't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they said they've opted out of everything. If they've opted out, we need to buy it.
They've essentially given up at that point.
That's exactly right. They said the treatment is worse than the cancer.
Wow. And so for people who are looking at this and saying, well, this is all great and all, they should also know that as yet another, I guess, layer of confidence that they have when they're considering doing something like this, each investor can come in and they can see all this information. This is on what we used to call page 14. Now it's like five pages from the end. We don't have a catchy name for it yet, but it's there. And people themselves can see this. So they don't have to take your word for it. It is so open and transparent. They have access to all this. You'll show them the report. They can see for themselves what type of cancer they have, all these things that you were, you know, talking about, the factors that you look at. And they don't have to speak, you know, doctor speak. They don't have to have gone to medical school for 12 years to understand it. It's something that everybody can easily understand.
That's exactly right. You know, we can always, you know, look at all the things and it'll sink in. You know, if you just read it, it's going to sink in how bad it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll tell, you know, what days they were in the hospital, what days they've been out, if they've had to rush back for emergency treatment. All this is right there in the report. So once you understand that report, you know, it's pretty easy, I think, to make the decision.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of medical ease there. It really just comes down to common sense.
I think it is all common sense because, first of all, it tells us how old they are, how long they've been fighting this, what the doctors say. And then the doctors say, oh, we think this person can live 2 years.
Yeah.
Or we think they can live 18 months. And then we have to make the decision, do we think it's really a good policy? And, you know, if it's short-term, lots of times it's even shorter than what they say.
So to be involved in this program, one does need to be accredited. So if people are thinking, well, gosh, you know, I'm down to my last, you know, 50,000, this may not be the program for them. You're looking for people to come and be involved in the life settlement who are accredited. And that means?
This means if they've come and they're going to do this, this is all the reports. This, everything's laid out for them.
Okay. And so they have to have there's a certain income level, there is a certain asset level. So what?
Yes, you have to make $200,000 a year to participate. You must be accredited to be in this program.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not accredited, you can do an annuity or something like that. But if you are accredited, you can come into the program if you make $200,000 a year, or if you're worth $1 million without your home. You can have a lake house, anything. That will be your ranch, your rent houses. All that will count. Only thing that doesn't count is your home. And if either one of those, you don't have to have both, but either one of those will work.
Okay. So as people kind of run around, you know, there may be a lot of people riding around in their truck, you know, listening right now, and they don't have access to it. They don't have it ready, but they're kind of running through some numbers in their head. It's definitely worth, when you get to the house, you know, go through some of the documents, kind of gather up, you know, what's where, maybe look at, you know, some old 401ks you may have laying around that you may have forgot about, maybe a past employer from a number of years ago. That counts. Add that in there. Kind of gather some of these things up before they come to see you, and that helps you get some kind of an educated guess of where they're starting and where they need to be. So for somebody who's kind of has, they're right there on the cusp, how long would you say, because this is usually one of the final questions they have, is how long does it take to build their retirement? I mean, if they start in their 50s, are they okay? Should they have started in their 40s?
If you start in your 40s, you should have a lot of money if you've done this right by the time you're ready to retire. But you can start at 50, 55. You know, it's not going to hurt you. You need about 7 years, you know, to do this.
All right, so it's doable, because I think a lot of people think, oh, geez, you know, I'm 53 right now, and golly, I didn't do anything, and so, yeah, I've got a little money in the bank, but it's probably not enough to retire on. No, it's definitely worth gathering up some information. Come sit down and talk to you, and you can work things out.
That's exactly right. And let's say you're going to retire next year. If you've got $350,000, $400,000, $500,000, what we have to do is just keep making the interest come in even after you retire, and we can still get there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we have to keep the money churning as far as interest, in other words, in order to give you enough money to live on.
And going in, you set all this up ahead of time. So, you know, there's no surprises when somebody retires, everything's going to drastically change. No. You get them to where they need to be ahead of time, but you're also planning at the same time what's going to happen the first day that they're retired, 5 years after they're retired, 10 years after they're retired. You know, where's the money that you're going to live on? Where's the money that you're going to reinvest? Where are we going to, you know, take that, the profits, and reinvest them? All that is mapped out ahead of time. So it's a very smooth transition. Is it fair to say that people don't really notice a difference financially from their last day of work to the first day of retirement? Is it that smooth?
I think it's that smooth if we do everything in advance.
Yeah.
And usually they have to give 30 days notice to their employer about what they're going to do with their retirement. So we're on that usually long before they retire. We've talked to the client, we've talked to the company, and we say, okay, yes, they are taking their money out. Yes, this is, they want to do a rollover. And you have to let them know it's at least 30 to 60 days before you retire.
Okay, so you're there to basically advise people also of things that they may not be aware of or may not know.
That's right, because lots of times we have a lot of things we have to do before the retirement date.
Okay. Perfect. All right, Faye, so I know this being Saturday, there's nobody at the office right now, but people call all the time. They leave a message. You'll call them back next week. You'll set up a time. They can come in and talk to you and get all kinds of information. So one last time, Faye, what is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. And, you know, when they quit you know, we have a lot of people that, you know, just think about it and procrastinate. But we're looking for the people that are tired of procrastinating and want to come on in and talk to us, okay?
Exactly. And you have availability to see people in the next week or so, right?
I will, yes.
You've been listening to Your Money with Fay Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Fay Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.